I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is March 2nd, and the time is 1:40 p.m. Members present are Representative Drummond, Representative Newman, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Kopp, myself, Chair Wool, and alternate Representative Eastman is sitting at the table. We do have a quorum. Please silence your cell phones. If you have any communication with the committee, please go through Matt Greening, who's sitting over here as committee staff. And I'd like to thank Heather Evoy and Cody Grusendorf for staffing this meeting as well. Our first order of business today is Senate Bill 33, Name State Ferries, MV Taslina and Hubbard. It's our first hearing on the bill. Here to present the legislation is Captain Michael Neusel, Deputy Commissioner, DOT and Public Facilities. Captain Neusel, you know the drill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Michael Neusel, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. On behalf of Governor Walker, Lieutenant Governor Malott, and Commissioner Lucan, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce for your consideration, and I hope favorable consideration, the naming of our two newest ferries for the Alaska Marine Highway System. The process to develop those names was conducted over a year-long period, essentially a school contest for middle school and high school students to submit essays. We had about 450 entries submitted. Independent panel judged those, narrowed them down to the top 10, sent those to the commissioner, governor, and lieutenant governor. They made the final selections from that and put forth the names motor vessel Taslina and motor vessel Hubbard for the two new Alaska class ferries that are currently under construction down in Ketchikan. As you know, the names of Alaska Marine Highway System vessels are by statute required to be named after glaciers in Alaska. Those two certainly meet that criteria. If interested, I could give a brief update on the status of that construction, but I know you're pressed for time, so I'll take any questions you might have, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Solomon Leonard.
Actually, I wouldn't mind an update.
There you go.
Mind, sir. Yeah.
Through the chair, to Representative Sullivan Leonard, the two vessels are under construction. The first one, the Taslina, is essentially half built. The forward half of the vessel, it's being built in modules. So, as the modules get assembled and erected into the ship in the assembly hall in Ketchikan, it takes up a good part of the building. The first half was actually rolled outside about a month ago. Interior work is being done on that while it's outside, and the stern half of the first vessel is undergoing construction. Main engines are installed, generators are installed, car deck being built on top of that. Several modules were built at the same time. So, for example, the bulbous bows on the vessel, both were built at the same time, so they're ready to essentially just weld onto the vessels as they're completed. And the same is true for other modules within the construction. But for the larger modules, they are assembled in place in the assembly hall. Once the second half is done, they'll be mated together and welded together, and the outfitting will begin.
What's the estimated completion date?
The latest estimates from the shipyard, Mr. Chairman, the latest estimates from the shipyard were that the Taslina would be delivered shortly after the start of calendar year 2018, January 2018 timeframe, and then the second vessel is probably looking at January 2019 timeframe.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Newman.
Chair, just for clarity, and we're working on the budget, Captain, these are built on time, on budget. They're as built.
Through the chair,
build project.
Through the chair, Representative Newman. These were actually built under a innovative procurement model called the construction manager general contractor process. So we selected a general manager for the project, a construction manager for the project, which was Vigor Shipyard in Ketchikan, and then negotiated a best price, maximum guaranteed price contract with that vendor. So, as you know, it's all state funded through appropriations of state dollars, UGF, to fund those contract of those two vessels.
And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to assure that people knew that these were contract, no guaranteed, no credit price increases.
Thank you. I guess with no further questions, I will thank you, Deputy Commissioner Neusel, and I'd like to open up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room or online that wishes to testify on SB 33? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. And seeing as this is a fairly innocuous bill, I'd like to move it from committee and get it on the road here. Are there any further questions from committee members?
You mean get it on the water?
Question or comment?
Well, these are marine highways, remember?
That's right.
Are there any further questions or comments from committee members? May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill number 73 out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, of which there don't seem to be any.
Representative Drummond, could you report that as Senate Bill 33?
It says House, the one in front of me says House Bill 33. Sorry. I can change that.
Yeah, can you change that?
All right. Mr. Chairman, I move to report SB 33 out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Version 30-GS1664/A.
Thank you. Seeing no objections, it is so ordered. We'll take it at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, we'll be back on the record. Our next order of business is HB 132, Transportation Network Companies. CS has been drafted and distributed to committee members. Representative Drummond may have a motion to bring the CS before us, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 132, Work Draft LS 0522/J as a working document.
Seeing no objection, the CS before us as a working document. I'd like to have my staff, Laura Steidolf, come and present the CS and walk us through the changes, please. Can you identify yourself, Ms. Steidolf?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Laura Steidolf, staff to Representative Wohl. These are the changes to HB 132 for the work draft CS for HB 132, Transportation Version J. These changes were made to mirror changes made in the other body to clean up some of the language to ensure the original intent of the bill was met. This bill was not meant to add any additional cost to the state to regulate. There was also a change made that reflected more of a TNC company policy versus what is in state statute, which I will get into further while I explain the changes. Section 2 was added. AS 965 is amended by adding a new section 965-350, immunity for certain actions related to transportation network companies. The state or municipality and the officers, employees, and agents of the state or a municipality are not liable in tort for damages for the injury to or death of a person or property damage resulting from an act, omission, or failure of a transportation network company or driver to comply with the requirements of AS 2823 or other law. This section was added to relieve the burden of cost to state of having to regulate TNCs. If a TNC driver is at fault, it's a civil matter and has to go through civil court. State has immunity from civil action. The intention of this bill was for no departments to have to do active regulation, checking insurance, etc., which relieves the DMV position in the fiscal note that was with HB 132. Sections of the original bill are now one section sequentially ahead in the CS from Section 2 on. Section 6, page 7, line 26, remove the original language from I and add, if the insurance carrier for the transportation network company makes a payment for a claim for physical damage to a personal vehicle that is subject to a lien, the insurance carrier shall pay the claim jointly to the owner of the personal vehicle and the primary lien holder or directly to the business repairing the personal vehicle. So the original intent of the this section of the bill was to dictate payment terms, not coverage and requirements, which the old section got into, and it's already covered in the B and C subsection of Section 6. The language was just cleaned up to have payment terms. And Section 7, page 9, line 27, Section 2823110, remove the original A, B, and C subsections and add A. The transportation network company shall adopt a policy prohibiting discrimination based on destination or a class or status protected under AS 1880-210 with respect to a rider or potential rider. The company shall inform drivers of the policy. B, a transportation network company driver shall comply with all applicable laws relating to accommodation of service animals. And C, a transportation network company may not impose additional charges for providing services to riders with physical disabilities because of those disabilities. And this change was done to basically remove TNC company policy and add Alaska's civil rights statute language, so nothing has changed in statute in regards to civil rights. In wrap-up, I would like to remind the members of the committee the intent of this bill was to allow ride-sharing companies to operate in Alaska. Ride-sharing is now happening in 49 other states. Not only does it add convenience and ease of transportation for your constituents, it also provides the opportunity for revenue into households that need help in times like these when Alaska is facing perhaps the worst fiscal crisis in our state's history. For drivers, it is a supplemental income with an extremely flexible schedule and gives people the chance to make extra money without jeopardizing their home life with set hours. For passengers, they now have additional transportation options that fit their lifestyle better and save precious time in their lives by not waiting for availability. And for community, more money is spent at local businesses. An estimated $170 million was added to the California economy in 2014 by Lyft alone. Not to mention the public safety aspect, where over 90% of passengers feel like they are more likely to avoid impaired driving because of choosing a rideshare option. And one last point that hasn't even been touched on in committee, but I think is worth being mentioned, there's also huge savings to our nation. A study was done by the Journal of American Medical Association where 500 riders who use Medicaid and Medicare to pay for their rides to the doctor's appointments, it was found they saved 32% of their ride costs by using ride shares, which is very meaningful when you take into account Medicaid and Medicare spend $2.7 billion annually on patient transportation. Ride sharing is the future, and it isn't going anywhere. We need to show the rest of the nation that Alaska welcomes innovation and is a place that will embrace the 21st century.
Thank you, Ms. Steidolf. We have a lot of testifiers, both online. We have some in the room as well. And we have people from Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. We have people representing Uber, people representing Lyft. And again, a lot of people want to testify. So I'm going to limit the phone testimony to 2 minutes. And we will start with them first and then get people in the room up. And so if there's are there any questions from the committee?
I have questions, but I could wait until after.
Okay. Yeah, so we have testifiers and we have some people there ready to answer questions as well. So
thank you, Mr. Chair, for being cognizant of the people waiting online to testify.
Yeah.
Let them talk first.
Okay. So I will start off with the top of the list. We have Evan Eads in Fairbanks, LIO. Evan, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Can you state your name and affiliation and try to keep it to 2 minute testimony?
Yes, sir. My name is Evan Eads.
Hold on one second, please. I got to do the formality of opening public testimony. Okay. Now you may begin.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Again, my name is Evan Eads, and I speak for myself today. There are three main reasons why I am in full support of this bill. I'll start with first is the image of our cities, and that is, as already been mentioned, cities from across the country, but also around the world, from Southeast Asia to Central America, already have this service. And for us to still be nowhere near adopting it, or until now, is a shame. When travelers, business people, from wherever they come from, have certain expectations of service, and when they come here, we should be able to provide that. Second is public safety. I'm sure you guys have heard some of the studies, the Temple University study done from 2009 to 2014 shows a reduction in drinking and driving deaths in the cities where Uber, I don't want to just Uber, there's others too, but where Uber had been in place, a reduction in deaths of 3.6 to 5.6 percentage difference. There have been other studies which say that they don't really have an impact. I would like to point out that those studies, in the language of them, it says that they it would likely play a larger role in places where there's fewer public transportation options, such as here in Alaska. And so I think that would be an enormous factor. If you look at Fairbanks in particular, where I'm from here, you might think there are a lot of options. You see Arctic Cab, King Cab, Alaska Cab. All those are the same company. So the options are actually very limited. So there aren't as many choices as even would be apparent. What this would allow for also is a broader support network for business, for events, for whether it be Alaska Chiefs, Winter Games, etc. It would be a much broader support for those things, not to mention, as was mentioned earlier in the, you have elderly people and indigent people who rely heavily on rides to get to and from necessary appointments and other things. It's within everyone's interest to support this bill. And my question for anyone who wouldn't support it is who is going to advocate that consumers need fewer options? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eads. Next, we'll go to Anchorage. We have, unless this person is just here for advice, but Jim Brennan?
Here.
Okay. Are you here to testify?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You state your name and affiliation and try to keep it to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Brennan. I'm an attorney for the Anchorage Tax Cap Permanent Owners Association. I've been practicing in this area of tax cap regulation for decades. And I think this is a very bad bill. I don't think you should pass it for several reasons. Number one, it has a municipal preemption provision in Section 7. The cities and towns in Alaska have traditionally regulated passenger transportation for hire. It's different from city to city. Alaska does not lend itself to a one-size-fits-all approach. And also, there should be a somewhat level playing field between regulation of TNCs and taxicabs, which are in direct competition. You should let the cities handle this. Anchorage has been working hard on a transportation, TNC ordinance itself, you should let the cities resolve this. Secondly, there is no physical note, as I see now. There had been previously with the Senate committee substitute version, a $280,000 physical note. If I'm reading this correctly, that's disappeared. And as staff just presented it, the idea and intent is to have no cost at all to the state. Well, that's a laugh. That is a joke to pass a law like this without any administration or enforcement. I don't see anywhere in the bill that assigns this to a state agency. This thing isn't going to take care of itself. Transportation network companies, just like taxicab companies, need to be regulated. Who is going to force them to comply with the limited provisions you do have in this act? Originally, there was a $280,000 physical note. In order to do this job correctly, I think you need more than that. Anchorage has four full-time employees, and just in regulating taxicabs and limousines, and you're talking about statewide enforcement of a brand new law. So I want to address one additional point that one of the speakers indicated was that this would add part-time jobs to Alaska. But whose jobs are those coming at the expense of? Coming at the expense of full-time jobs, long-time jobs, by people who have made a career of driving taxi cabs in Anchorage and elsewhere in Alaska. There's only so much in the way of demand out there. And what you're going to do is take away a homegrown Alaskan industry. You're going to funnel off 20% of it in the case of Uber to go to 20% of the fares will go to a San Francisco-based multi-billion-dollar corporation. So I would urge you not to pass this bill and to leave this to municipal regulation. The state has enough to do right now with budgetary items. It's a fiction to think that it can take this on without additional expense. It's substituting municipal in place of municipal regulation, it's substituting what appears to be no oversight, no administration, no enforcement, no penalties for noncompliance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brennan. Next, from Anchorage, we have, where did they go? Michelle Napier from Juneau. Michelle, are you on the line?
Hello?
Yep.
Hi, I have to strongly agree.
Michelle, can you state your name and your affiliation and keep your testimony to 2 minutes, please?
Yep. Okay, my name is Michelle Napier, and I'm a taxi driver here in Juneau. I've been a dispatcher and taxi driver for 20 years, and I have to absolutely agree with the attorney that just spoke. I would strongly urge this bill to not be passed. Our vehicles get mechanical inspections. We also get taxi drivers. I believe all over Alaska get get checked medically, get clearance. We have fees. We bring the city and the state money. We have to get a business license, chauffeur's license. We pay, bring money into the cities and the states. And I think it's important to be regulated. I can see why there's reasons for rules and laws to be followed, and for Uber to come in and be unregulated would not bring the city or state any money. It's kind of nonsense for us to have direct competition after a decade and lose money. It's pretty unreasonable.
Okay. Are y'all?
And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Kathy Wasserman, calling in from Washington, D.C. at the moment. Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you state your name and affiliation, please, and kind of keep testimony at 2 minutes?
Wasserman. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. Sorry I'm not there. I'm in Washington, D.C. on business. I, as Jim Brennan, am opposed to the bill as written at this time because of Section 7, which takes away the ability of municipalities to regulate a business within their own jurisdiction. I mean, we don't, especially when we do regulate taxi cabs, and yet now we bring in a competitor that we don't regulate. I'm here with county and borough commissioners from across the United States, and I talked to many of them who have Uber in their towns, and I've used Uber since I've been here in D.C., once I figured it out, and it's great, but they told me that just like any business, while it has a very positive side, it also comes with some issues, and if the cities and boroughs in the state don't have the ability to fix those issues and then have to depend on the state, who then says, well, wait, we didn't budget any money to do it, This is going to cause some problems. One of the problems that I had never thought of was cabs are regulated to only park in cab spaces when they wait for a fare. But unlike that, the Uber drivers can park anywhere. And like in Juneau, we have a shortage of parking spaces, so we could potentially have Uber drivers parked in many of the parking spaces downtown, then taking away for the people who come down here to shop or do business. But there just are a lot of reasons why we should be able to regulate, and each city can decide through their residents what those regulations should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Next up, we have David O'Malley.
Actually, I have a question for
you. We have a question from committee member Representative Clayman.
Yes. You said you've been talking with city managers and others from other cities and municipalities around the country. Are any of those localities expressing that they were able to have legislation that allowed them to have pass local laws relating to these transportation network companies or were all of them prohibited from doing so by the state legislation, or is that a question you didn't even ask?
I did ask. A couple of people talked about it. Some are, like this legislation, not allowed. The counties are not allowed to set regulations. Many of them have changed their state laws, and now they're now doing regulations. So it was kind of across the board. And I didn't keep track, and I just... I don't have those numbers, but I could probably get them.
But would it be fair to say from your conversations that if the transportation network companies are here telling us that we can't offer anything about local control because 38 or 40 other states don't allow local control, what you're hearing in your conversations is that many counties or cities have been allowed to have local control, and that the states are not requiring that the low control is an option nationwide in terms of these transportation network companies?
Representative claims to the chair, I believe that some of the communities, yes, said they were allowed to have some local control.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. No more questions for Ms. Wasserman. I will move on with testimony. David O'Malley, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes, hello. My name is Dave O'Malley. Do you read me?
Yep, if you could state your name and your affiliation and try to keep it under 2 minutes.
Okay, my name is Dave O'Malley. I am both an Anchorage cab driver and an Uber driver. I've been a long-time advocate for fairness and common sense in the transportation industry, mainly here in the Anchorage taxi cabs. In 2015, I was the first Uber driver in Anchorage, and that's after a year of trying to solicit Uber to come here. Now I'm trying to bring them back. Anchorage and all of Alaska needs TNCs. The people of Anchorage and Alaska want TNCs. They are bringing needed competition and innovation to a broken, closed industry. Like other industries, competition will do most of the regulation. They're not going to be, TNCs don't dump all the responsibilities and liabilities on municipalities and basically the taxpayers. People are sick and tired of dealing with the monopolies they are forced to work with. TNCs not only benefit residents of Anchorage, but everyone visiting Anchorage, especially from villages and the cruise ship industry. Speaking for Anchorage cab drivers, we want the option. TNCs are not hurting the industry. They are raising and improving business. We are sick of dealing with the corrupt cartels that control practically every aspect of our jobs. So, being that I did work with Uber, drivers are continuously coming up to me asking me, when is Uber coming, plus Lyft. They want Uber and Lyft. They don't want to be dealing with, it's just a very bad situation here in Anchorage, and we want to improve it. And we want to make more money, and we want to give better service. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Anchorage to Brett Frazier. Brett, are you there?
Hi, hello, this is Brett.
Hi, Brett. If you could state your name, affiliation, and keep it under 2 minutes, that'd be great.
My name is Brett Frazier. I went to high school and college in Alaska, and currently I'm a third-year law student at the University of Michigan, and I'm calling on behalf of myself. I think that Uber belongs in Alaska for three reasons. First, it's good for consumers. Second, public safety. And third, it's good for Alaska. The fact that people are testifying against Uber because they're afraid of taxi tech cab jobs going away, I think speaks to the fact that Uber can offer competitive prices to indigent consumers and individuals who otherwise have a difficult time getting to their appointments. I know that when I was a college student at the University of Alaska Anchorage, I had to cancel appointments because my car wasn't functioning and I could not afford the very expensive taxi fares. The people who need this most are the people who can least afford taxi cabs. The second reason is public safety. It sounds like on the record already someone has submitted evidence that Uber and the presence of Uber and other ride-sharing services reduces drunk driving accidents. Having lost friends and acquaintances to drunk driving, I feel very strongly that any policy which prevents that kind of damage occurring in a community where drunk driving is unfortunately very pervasive and a very real problem is something that this legislature should take seriously. Finally, it's good for Alaska. I think it's good for our image. I've heard a lot about the municipal preemption clause. I'm not an expert on municipal preemption clauses, but nothing I read in Section 7 actually insulates Uber or Lyft drivers from civil liability if they get into an accident. I know that now automotive insurance companies offer Phase 1 insurance coverage for drivers who have not yet picked up a fare but are currently logged on to the app. There's nothing in the bill that would prevent those insurance providers from providing precisely that coverage in Alaska. I think it's a red herring or a straw man to suggest that these drivers aren't regulated because they're subject to the same liability as everybody else. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony.
So
I actually have a question for
this. Brett, are you still there? I think we're going to move along. We're going to go to the Anchorage LIO. Jacqueline Ransom, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Jacqueline. Can you state your name, affiliation, and keep it under 2 minutes?
Yes. My name's Jacqueline Ransom. I'm a permit owner. I'm calling in opposition to this House Bill 132 and strongly encourage you to vote against this bill. It takes away the right of the cities to self-govern themselves. Even if you modify it, it's still, all the cities in Alaska are very diverse, and they've all come up with what their public wants in regards to safety, in regards to fares, in regards to inspections, or all of that kind of thing. Bethel has a whole system. Nome has a different one. Cassaview has a different one. Anchorage has a very extensive list of regulations that we are regulated under. Uber comes in as a billion-dollar company and doesn't want to follow any regulations or anything for anybody. Your bill introduces them to everybody in the state, regardless of what they want, and does not give the public the safeguards that they are entitled to and that they have voted for in their own community. Right now in Anchorage, we have inspections of our cars every 6 months. We have DOT physicals. We have chauffeur licensing cameras in our cars. We have federal background checks. We have drug tests. This is what the community of Anchorage wants. This legislation that you're talking about bypasses all of those things. Our budget in Anchorage is double what that $280,000 or whatever you had in there, and then took out. Who do you think is going to enforce? Uber is notorious for not following anybody's rule. That's why they left Anchorage in the first place. They gave free rides for a lot of people, but they didn't want to follow our local laws, so they said, well, we're going to take our ball and go home, and they left.
Jacqueline, your
cameras in their cars are very needed. The police department uses them for safety. When we had that big fire at the Royal Suite,
Jacqueline, if you
our cab drivers took their own time to go to the transportation and the police and pull those camera chips out to help find out what happened to those poor people. Uber's not
going
to.
Jacqueline, if you could wrap up your testimony.
We're going to send 20% out of state. Thank you.
Thank you.
I could go on for more.
Next, we're going to go to Agnes Farmer, who's in Anchorage.
Hi, my name is Agnes Farmer. I am here in opposition to House Bill 132, and I would like you to vote against this bill. I think that we do not need to be taking local control away from our municipality when it comes to regulating our transportation industry, because as a community, we have voted on the laws that we would like to have around here. I do not understand why our state would want to fund this when the money will be going out of state. A TNC starts hemorrhaging 20 to 25% of our local dollars to the lower 48 as soon as they step in and start playing ball. I would like to keep our money in Alaska local, because when I pay my lease from the people in Anchorage that I collect my fares from, I pay my lease to a local owner, and the money stays in the state, where she pays a local dispatcher, who then pays his employees, and we all live here in Anchorage, and we keep our money in Anchorage. In a recession, that is the most important point that I would like to make today. As far as safety goes, as a resident of Anchorage, I would never, first of all, drive a cab that didn't have a camera in it, but I also wouldn't like to be one woman riding in a taxi without a camera in it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you're at 2 minutes, so if you could wrap it up, that'd be great.
I would like for you to vote against this bill.
Thank you. Next, we have Kirsten Miles. Kirsten, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Can you state your name, affiliation, and keep your testimony to 2 minutes?
Yes, Chairman Wool and members of the Transportation Committee. Thank you. My name is Kirsten Miles. I'm the director of the Cook and Let Cabaret Hotel Restaurant and Retailers Association, representing the municipality of Anchorage's hospitality industry, including 543 establishments that currently hold liquor licenses. I'm testifying today in support of HB 132, which takes steps necessary to open up the public transportation market in Alaska for ride-sharing companies like Uber and Lyft. Cook Inlet Char wholeheartedly supports any efforts to improve public transportation for Alaska and, of course, for Anchorage's residents, and we appreciate the steps the legislators are taking to ensure responsible service with proper insurance and safety requirements being met. At a recent Anchorage Assembly hearing where the issue of increasing the number of cabs was heard and ultimately passed, cab owners and drivers complained it was not economically feasible to service areas like Eagle River and Girdwood, and that there are too many cabs on the street and not enough fares to go around. Conversely, consumers testified about unanswered calls, long wait times, excessive fares, cabs in poor condition, and subpar customer service. Opening up public transportation to ride-sharing programs takes care of many of these problems. It allows locals in the Eagle River Girdwood communities to service their own, introduce competition that will raise standards of service, and let the consumers decide what kind of service they want to put their money towards. Additionally, ride-sharing is good for public safety. Separate studies in 2015 by Temple University and Fox School of Business found ride-sharing programs attributed to a reduction and alcohol-related homicides by as much as 5.6% annually. After banning ride-sharing services, Uber and Lyft, in 2015, the city of Austin, Texas, reported a 7.5% increase in DUIs compared to the previous year, according to a TechDirt article in 6/17/16. Cook Inlet Char is always interested in finding ways to improve responsible service and keep our patrons safe. Improving the potential availability and competitive pricing of transportation services by opening up the market to more rivalry is a positive move and one we support. I hope you'll move HB 132 for the betterment of Alaska, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for testimony, Kirsten. We're going to go to Wasilla. Ryan McKee, or we're still at the Anchorage LIO, but Ryan McKee, are you there?
Yeah. So Ryan McKee, representing myself. I'm speaking today in support of HB 132. A lot of the issues have been raised here. I think one thing that's really interesting is that when you hear public testimony, both here at the state level as well as the municipality, you mainly hear from taxi drivers or permit holders or whatnot in their opposition to this. You rarely hear from the actual customers who are having to pay for these services testifying in opposition. Most people testify in support. As has been stated, long wait times, poor service, unreliable service, all of those things have taken had impacts on people. Obviously, the price of a taxi is one thing, and just to go from Southside Anchorage down to downtown could cost you anywhere from $20 to $30 one way. With Uber and Lyft and ride-sharing companies like this, the cost is a fraction of what it would be to take a cab, as well as the technology there. You can see the cab or the Uber or Lyft driver coming on their way. And many times when you take a cab as is, you have to get in the cab and then basically direct them to your location because many of them do not have any kind of navigation system on board, and so that also the big inconvenience for riders. So again, there's been a lot of reasons that have been stated as to why rideshare should come. We're one of the last states, I believe, to actually partake in this, and I think it would definitely benefit the different cities, especially in this time when they're looking for additional ways to raise revenue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ryan. Let's move to the off-net. And Jamie Bigoyos in Anchorage, are you there? Jamie?
Jaime
Bigoyos?
Yes, I'm calling for myself.
Okay.
In support of the HB 132, because I believe it is very safe for the rider and for the driver, because you can use the system without giving your credit card information. So if you do anything wrong, you'll get caught very quickly, even if you use somebody else. That information that is on file will be used against that trip that was or that went sour. It is convenient because, like the other, you can park anywhere, not to any dedicated areas. So I support it, and it's so affordable because as long as you got the app, you don't have to worry about having money. It's all taken care of. You can pay later. Thank you.
Thank you, Jaime. Next, Eric Musser from Municipality of Anchorage. Eric, are you there?
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. We're listening only.
They're just listening.
Oh, sorry. Jeremy Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to applaud you and your efforts on this bill. I think it's a great piece of legislation. It's good public policy.
Can you state your name and affiliation? And be on the record.
Yeah, Jeremy Price.
Yep.
I'm the Alaska State Director of Americans for Prosperity here in the state. And I'm calling to testify in support of this legislation. I think it's a great bill. I think it's very compromise. And I think it adds to the choice for the consumer in Alaska. And that's just fundamental to providing better service and a better product. And we just desperately need it. I just want to provide a couple anecdotes. Some of the others have called in and made good arguments. I just want to provide an anecdote. On Monday, I took a cab from my house in Bayshore to the airport. Well, I tried to. I waited 25 minutes for that cab to get there, and it didn't come. So I made a decision of having to get in my truck and go drive to the airport, park, and now I'm in D.C. right now, so I've spent 5 days' worth of parking fees just because I didn't know if the cab was going to show, and I waited almost a half hour. And that's happened to other folks, too. This isn't just me. Meanwhile, I'm in D.C. I take an Uber to get to my hotel, and there's no problem. I know when the Uber is coming. I can see it on my phone. I can see who it is. I can see what he or she is driving. And then I rate them when they leave, if it was a good customer experience or not. Bottom line here is there are numerous examples of bad service, bad customer experiences with cabs in Anchorage. And I'm going to throw cold water on what the AML said. Local jurisdictions have completely fumbled the ball. They created this cartel that we have in Anchorage. They're the reason we have this problem, by placing caps on the number of permits that could be issued. So I applaud you for not giving in to giving all these jurisdictions across the state control over this, because they'll mess it up. That's their history. They've proven they can't handle it. So it's great that what you're doing with this legislation. I applaud you for it. We highly recommend it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go to Anchorage. Joelle Hall, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Joelle Hall, and I'm here to testify today on behalf of the Alaska AFL-CIO. Our organization represents over 50,000 workers over the state, all over the state, working in a variety of industries. We oppose HB 132 because we oppose the misclassification of workers. The action in this bill will exclude TNC drivers from workers' comp and UI as a special unemployment insurance as a special class of worker. We think this is a dangerous precedent because the TNC drivers do not meet the standard of a true independent contractor. If you analyze the name used by the industry themselves, you can see the heart of our objection, a transportation network company. This is a network of workers doing the same job with a significant portion of control over their work being dictated by a single corporate entity. They work in a network doing the exact same job as hundreds of other drivers for the same company. The TNCs tell them who to pick up. The TNCs pay for their insurance when they have a rider in the car, then collect the money and it all goes straight to the TNC. These drivers do not meet the standard of an independent contractor and should not be exempted from the basic laws protecting workers. Adding TNC drivers to the list of workers who are exempted from workers' comp and unemployment but fail to meet the standard of an independent contractor is a slippery slope. Additionally, we oppose the preemption language in the bill. Each committee regulates taxis differently, as has been mentioned many times this afternoon. And since TNCs are in direct competition to taxis, we feel that the communities are best suited to handle this industry and determine the issues of fair competition in each jurisdiction. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Joelle. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Are taxi drivers considered employees or independent contractors?
Mr. Chairman, they're independent contractors.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to articulate what we perceive the difference to be.
I'm sorry, what now?
Mr. Chairman, they are independent contractors.
Taxi drivers are?
Yes.
Okay.
But they're... No.
I have a follow-up for
Representative Clinton has a question.
Ms. Hall, can you explain, because I'm looking at the bill in Section 4 referencing the AS 2330-230A, which is the exemptions to, I believe, exemptions to workers' comp coverage, and taxis are listed in Section 7 as taxi drivers are exempted, and this would add transportation network companies, but what's the distinction that you draw between taxi drivers and transportation network company drivers?
While they each have their own cars, it's an issue of control, command and control. The taxi drivers, they have the ability to reject a ride within reason. I'm sure that the other folks do too. But our main objection is that they do not, the insurance is obviously entirely unfair, and because at one point in the TNC's case, the TNC itself is paying for the insurance, that's a huge difference between a taxi driver. These are the primary costs of doing business. And the primary cost of doing business in this particular model of work is the insurance, and in this model, the company is paying for that. Secondly, these drivers have no control over the money that they're taxi drivers at the end of the evening have all of the money in their hand. Then they pay the vendors that they use to run their business, as any other business would. They pay the dispatch company, they pay the medallion owner. In a TNC situation, they don't pay the TNCs. The TNCs keep all that money, and at the end of the month, they send them a check. I would also argue that there was recently a class action lawsuit filed against a TNC for wage theft. You can't systematically defraud an entire class of people if they're not your employee, if you don't have control of their wages. So we think there's a distinction here, and it's they're trying to ride right down the middle between being an employee and an independent contractor by only partially complying. And we think there's a distinction with the way this business model works, and it's a distinction that is meaningful.
So follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Clement.
You were saying that, in the, as I understand it, at least at certain phases, the transportation network company is paying for the insurance for the drivers and their cars. What happens with taxi companies? Do the taxi cab drivers carry their own insurance, or is the owner of the cab that often leases it to a taxi driver, who pays the insurance coverage in the taxi world, if you know?
I actually don't know that. I assumed it was the driver.
Okay, I don't know either. That's why I was asking. And then the one more follow-up through the chair? Yeah,
follow-up, Representative Klein.
Then the other portion you were talking about, unemployment insurance. And do you know if taxi drivers contribute to unemployment insurance, or are they actually exempted from contributing to unemployment insurance in the same way that the transportation network drivers would be exempted from unemployment insurance under this bill? If you know.
I don't know. I'm sure there's people in the room who can answer the question about taxi cabs. I just know that in this particular bill, we're talking about exempting the TCN drivers from workers' comp and unemployment insurance. I mean, workers' comp and unemployment. And I don't believe they meet the standard in any definition that has been running around through the state of Alaska or in the national level of an independent contractor. And the taxi cabs are exempt. This came before my time, but they aren't regulated the same way, and they don't have the same obligations. TNCs have much more control over their workers than a taxi cab driver has. There is the only person that is over them, if they have a responsibility to, is the person who owns the medallion. And that's a rental basis, is my understanding. They rent the medallion.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hall. I see some head shaking, and maybe we'll have some testimony from taxi drivers. And if there's anyone online from Uber or Lyft that has any comments as far as pay or anything like that, as far as who controls the pay, feel free to step forward. And I will continue with call-in testimony, and we're running a little short on time, and I do want to get to the people in the room, so I will do a few more, one or two more on the phone here, and then we'll bring some people up. And Kevin Rustin in Anchorage, are you there?
Yes, I am. My name is Kevin Rustin. I'm a citizen. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to speak in regards to this bill. I am in opposition to it. You are throwing out over 100 years of both customer and worker protections with this bill, and you are completely abandoning the disabled community in the various areas around the state. The control that we have that was mandated, the American Disabilities Act, you are completely disregarding the responsibilities that the state has and the municipalities have. These TNCs supplant traditional means of transportation, such as taxis and buses, which work to comply with the Americans Disability Act. All right, they, since their inception, they have been nothing but empty promises in regards to servicing that community. You are not increasing options for people; you're actually decreasing. You are taking away opportunities for transportation, education, entertainment for the people, and you're leading to their isolation. You're not. You're basically segregating this segment of the population. That's not innovation. That's not new. That's part of our ugly past. The other thing I'd like to mention is where we talk about the public safety issue with the DWIs. I will point out, please do your due diligence on it, because there are several studies now that are saying that those original studies were quite flawed and that there is not any reduction in DWIs. I specifically would point to an article that the Washington Post just recently reported. They had commented with the study from the USC, University of Southern California, and Oxford University. Please check that.
The other thing I'll mention is it's quite laughable to feel that no cost is going to be used by the state to have a budget item to regulate these TNCs. I can't help but be reminded of the scene in The Godfather where Michael Corleone asked the corrupt senator to pay for his casino license. This is ridiculous. These people, their legal argument with the ADA has been basically that they are not a business, that they are not responsible. That's how they shirk their responsibilities, by denying them. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to take one more online and bring some people up that are in the room. Justin Soder, are you online?
I'm sorry, it's Justin Slater. She must have heard me wrong.
Justin, can you state your name and affiliation and your two-minute testimony?
Justin Slater, and speaking on my own behalf.
Okay.
Just want to say that I'm in favor of the bill. I believe that, like, taxi companies, they do have a racket, especially in Anchorage, for instance. I mean, I quite literally try to avoid going to Anchorage as much as possible now, if it involves anything where I might have to take a cab at some point, because it's just not worth the hassle, more or less. Anytime I've lived anywhere that does have ride-share options, it's always been substantially easier to get around when either you don't have a vehicle or should not be driving. And I just feel like the cab companies are in such strict opposition because they know that given other options, people are going to choose to use those options because the cab companies offer such poor service. And if this bill does nothing else but make the cab companies reevaluate their customer service, I think that that's a win for the consumer.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. There's a few more people online, but I know there's some people in the room who've been waiting for a while. I also wanted to, ask, maybe I'll start with Mitchell Matthews from Uber. Maybe there were some statements from someone about how the drivers are paid and that all the money goes to the TNC. And can you maybe run through that for the committee for us, Mitchell? Are you online?
Thank you very much. Yeah. Everyone, can you be able to hear me here?
Yes, just fine.
Wonderful. I'm Mitchell Matthews. I'm the Senior Operations Manager at Uber in the Northwest. Thank you for your time. Just want to make some clarifications here on the Uber platform of the product. So Uber is a technology company that provides a digital network that connects riders with drivers. Our riders are able to use their smartphones to request a safe, reliable ride at the touch of a button on their smartphone. And our independent contractor drivers value the flexibility of the model, which allows them to work when they want, for as long as they want, when they would like to log in. They can even work with our competitors. And drivers can choose to be paid when they want, which is daily, weekly, or within hours with our instant pay features. Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, Nevada, Minnesota, and Massachusetts have also made statewide determinations that Uber drivers are independent contractors for the purposes of unemployment compensation, and this was further affirmed by the Florida Court of Appeal in Florida. I would also like to speak to a few comments on insurance. Uber's rides operate in three periods, so period one, period two, and period three. Periods two and three have a $1 million coverage that goes about for liability, which is required under HB 132. In period one, the drivers have the flexibility to be in their house and not even in their car as they wait for a ride. As well, it matches the current coverage in Alaska, which is the highest in the United States for the minimum coverages for property, bodily, per accident and bodily per person. So we believe that in the insurance compromise, which we worked out with the national, which was adopted by the National Conference of Insurance Legislators, that this coverage meets the minimums required by the state of Alaska. As well, it's because the insurance is in effect by simply turning on the app, keeping the limit at the state limit removes any moral hazard or risk that someone's going to turn on the app to receive better coverage without any intention of actually engaging in ride sharing. So there's no gap in that coverage for when somebody is on logged into the Uber app. With respect to a consistent operating framework for TNCs in Alaska, HB 132 creates a statewide solution which allows consistent statewide regulations for drivers and independent contractors and independent business owners to conduct business without having to navigate a patchwork of local regulations that will differ from city to city. This allows drivers the ability to pick up riders across the state without worrying about being barred from picking up in one location or having a deadhead return fare from a one-way trip, which could be long. And this artificially restricts the earnings opportunities for drivers, and we've observed that in many states that don't have a statewide framework. The consistent framework will also enhance access to transportation in rural communities. It will connect underserved neighborhoods and residents, which we've heard of on the testimony as well. And then it consistently allows for drivers to connect with riders without the burden of multiple licensing, the patchwork of regulation, and increased barriers to entry and opportunities to earn. We do a comprehensive screening process done by a third party for applicants, and this is accredited and approved by the National Association of Professional Background Check Screeners. And this screen covers convictions based on social security numbers, driving records, and does not allow anyone to drive who is on the National Sex Offender public website, which is maintained by the U.S. Department of Justice. To drive with Uber, you must submit your full name, your date of birth, your social security number, a valid driver's license, valid vehicle registration, proof of insurance, and a valid bank account. And we also don't believe that safety ends with just a background check. Our app logs information for trips, which provides a great ecosystem for individuals so they can predict when their ride will be there, where their vehicle is. It allows for navigation in the app. You can share your ride with members if you're meeting them at a restaurant or home or a family member across the world or across the country. I thank you for your time and your consideration, and from my perspective, very excited to come back to Alaska and bring Uber to the Southeast, the South Central, and hopefully the Arctic.
Thank you. Mr. Matthews, are there any questions?
I probably have a lot of questions for Mr. Matthews,
okay.
But I also don't want to, I know we're taking public testimony.
Okay.
I'm happy to ask a couple and then come back to him later or
straight
to Bob, whatever.
Yeah, there are some people I know that have been waiting here for a while, and Mr. Matthews, I'm sure, will be on the line for a little bit longer. So maybe we'll have a few of the in-house testifiers, and then unless there's an immediate short question for Mr. Matthews.
Actually, one short
question. Okay, Representative Kleinman.
Mr. Matthews, we heard from the one person with the Municipal League who's in Washington meeting with other municipal managers, and I asked about laws that allow certain cities and counties and municipalities to actually have separate regulations and separate laws different than what may be the state laws and regulations, and she advised that there were several local areas that actually were having their own rules and regulations regarding the transportation network companies. Is that your understanding as well, or do you take a different view of that topic?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, just for a clarification, are you asking me if there are states that have, or are states that don't have state regulations?
No.
I'll
clarify the question. Are there some states that allow municipalities or cities or counties to have their own regulations for transportation network companies that may be different than what may have been passed on a statewide level?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, there are some states out there that have statewide regulations that were potentially adopted at the early onset. For example, Washington has statewide insurance only, which prescribes the insurance at that level, and small jurisdictions do have the ability to regulate. That, again, creates that patchwork regulations which restricts the ability for drivers to provide service within a metropolitan area. And a good example of that is...
Well, sure, but let me just ask, before you go on too long, because I want the chair to get back to the people testifying. In the simple example of Washington State, I think what you're telling us is that in Washington State, the state has chosen to establish insurance levels for transportation network companies, but a city such as Seattle has created its own regulations and laws with that are cover things that aren't just the insurance, and Uber is, or you're with Uber, right?
Right, I'm with Uber.
And you're still happy to be operating in Seattle, even though in the ideal world it would just be statewide. You're able to operate with Washington having certain requirements and Seattle doing other things that may not be, that aren't part of the Washington scheme.
Through the chair, Representative, Seattle was the third city which launched for Uber worldwide. So at that time, state regulation wasn't considered. There is a state bill currently looking to achieve a state regulation, and we're working with multiple stakeholders and municipalities to achieve that, because there is an inability for us to provide the TNC product across a patchwork of regulations. There's not the scale for us as a transportation network company to do so. So it removes the ability for cities to have that service.
But that's Mr. Matthews, that's just a long way of saying, yes, you're offering rides in Seattle, even though they have regulations and they haven't adopted a statewide framework in the state of Washington.
Through the chair, yes, only because they were the third city that Uber launched national or in the world, and that's the particular case for Seattle.
Thank you. We're going to get some people in the room who've been waiting here for a while. So if Erica Simpson's available.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the House and Transportation Committee. My name's Erica Simpson. I am here on behalf of myself, a resident of Juneau, Douglas Island, actually, and longtime travel industry professional. I'm here to speak in favor of HB 132. I'm going to make three very quick points. First, this bill promotes free enterprise and expands economic opportunity. Alaska and Juneau especially, with its high cost of living, relatively stagnant wages, and chronic need for better access and more transportation options, would benefit tremendously from Uber and Lyft. The full or part-time jobs created would help give our residents an additional employment option and supplemental income to help make ends meet. Taxi companies will argue that transportation apps would diminish their wages, put another person to work by taking those dollars out of their pockets. But it's really no different from what the taxis have done to our local tour companies here. Taxis have become so absorbed offering tours to summer visitors that their basic transportation component has fallen by the wayside. If you don't believe me, you can just check out the number of taxis at the Glacier all summer long. Our community members are the ones who suffer with that. Second, Uber and Lyft would offer a transportation option that fills a void in Juneau's current transportation system. Transportation applications are elastic and adapt to on-demand need, and Uber and Lyft would provide strictly basic transportation during times of high demand. Last week, a friend arrived on the late flight from Seattle, hoping to take a taxi home, and there were 20 people in line, but not one taxi in sight. Uber and Lyft would fill that need. How many times have weary travelers arrived at the Ock Bay Ferry Terminal at 2 a.m. after a delayed ferry out of Haines to find that not a single taxi is available to take to your home or to your hotel? Uber would fill that need. I also wonder how many DUIs have happened because people have not had the option for a ride home because of taxis being overwhelmed at bar close, and it's probably more than there should be. I'm sure it's different from city to city. I've personally walked home because I couldn't get a cab at 3 in the morning from downtown Juneau to Douglas as a lone female walking home by myself. Finally, HB 132 promotes accountability. One of the best things about Uber and Lyft is that both the driver and the passengers are held accountable for their experiences that they have. As a driver, you have a rating, and you're scored on the cleanliness of your vehicle, the customer service that you provide, safety and accuracy of your driving skills and your timeliness. Taxi companies don't offer that level of accountability because they are the only game in town. Having transportation applications would make these companies step up their game. The competition would force them to be accountable. In closing, my experience using Uber and Lyft down south is that they are far superior to using taxis. It's a better service, the cars are cleaner, and it's more timely and more affordable. I see no reason why our state and community can't handle this business model. And while Uber is a large company, it employs private citizens, and it works all over the country. If we allow them to operate here, we will put people to work, make our communities function more efficiently, and increase the competition and accountability. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Dennis Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is Dennis Harris. I own Custom Juno Tours and a new business that once I get my new limo permit will be myjunorides.com, and I will have my own app, and people will know when I'm coming. But that's aside. I am carrying a full commercial passenger transport insurance policy for a limousine. It cost me about $6,000 a year. For the 10 years I was driving my own taxi van here in Juneau, I was paying about $3,500 a year for insurance. And that's one of my major points, because one of the things that will happen, I guarantee it will happen, is that Uber drivers will be taking flag trips, even though they're not legal under Uber's contract. They will be off the app, passengers will flag them, or their friends will call them for a ride, and they will be carrying passengers for hire outside the app, which their personal insurance policy will not cover, and they will be driving without insurance. Unless you put something in this bill that requires commercial passenger insurance, you will find out the hard way when there are a large number of injured people that cannot recover because they will have an uninsured driver. And you will also, and the drivers will find out the hard way that they're not covered for collision insurance by anything Uber offers. I just wanted to let you know that. And the lien holders will be stuck if the vehicles don't cover the collision policy. One of the things I'm really concerned about, in Juneau, along with other cities, we have spent many years first passing a commercial passenger vehicle ordinance and then refining it. It works, and it especially works on a 6-crew ship day when we have an additional 22,000 to 27,000 people in downtown Juneau for up to 12 hours. We have 65 taxi cabs on the street at those peak times. We also have about 75 tour vans and minibuses, and 60 to 70 full-size passenger coaches, big buses. And in addition, on South Franklin Street, we also have freight coming from the Alaska Marine Lines terminal with big semis, and we have fuel trucks. This is one reason why the City Assembly, at their work session on Monday night, a committee of the whole meeting, discussed with their lobbyists why they wanted to oppose this bill unless cities had the right to opt out, because they know that they have spent many years trying to make this all work. In addition, in downtown Juneau, I pay for permits to park in docks and harbors spaces. The money from that goes to support the operation of those parking facilities and pickup facilities. And the same thing happens at the Juneau Airport. The Juneau Airport counts on that revenue. I'm sure the Anchorage Airport, which is a state, not a city airport, counts on that revenue, as does Fairbanks from commercial passenger vehicles. Under this bill, no one is allowed to charge them any fees for anything. And they're getting a free, Uber and their drivers are getting a free ride. And that is not a level playing field. And that is what concerns me about this bill, is the lack of a level playing field. And I'm very concerned about what's going to happen when this, if it goes into effect. In addition, Uber's background check is not sufficient. I sent you folks emails that included a link to this webpage, and I printed it out. It's 6 pages, double-sided, of deaths, assaults, sexual harassment incidents, and a number of other problems involving Uber and Lyft drivers where the background check was insufficient. Unless you require police department background checks, you're going to have a lot of problems. And, you know, there's nothing in this bill that allows the state to regulate anything either other than the insurance. And there's no fiscal note attached, which there should be. And there's no opportunity for the state to make any regulations. It doesn't refer to the Administrative Procedures Act whatsoever. Without the opportunity to make regulations, without the opportunity to require some minimal things like not smoking in vehicles, which our local ordinance does, you know, it's impossible. And I think you're going to end up with a can of worms, and you're going to be very sorry. Because what you're doing is you're giving carte blanche to an outside corporation who wants to come into Alaska, be exempt from everything, take 25% of the revenue instantly out of Alaska because they're now charging, Uber's now charging their drivers 25% for the dispatch fee. And they're using $13 billion of investor capital, venture capital, to underprice the market. Uber, and I sent a couple of you information about how Uber underprices the market. They're using that venture capital to charge fares that are below their cost in order to drive cab companies out of business. Once those cab companies are gone, there's no regulation on their pricing. And just like they do demand pricing now, when times get busy, prices go up for Uber. And the prices will always be up for Uber if there's no competition. So my feeling is that this is a bad bill. You shouldn't pass it. If you do pass it, you should certainly give cities the opportunity to opt out. And you need to really tighten some of the requirements in this bill, including the handicap requirements and the insurance requirements. I prided myself on having the cleanest, nicest taxi cab in Juneau, and I don't know if Ms. Simpson ever rode with me or not, but I did. And I had many customers. Sometimes I wasn't available to people because I had people who called me on the phone. I paid city sales tax, and I let the dispatcher know I was carrying personal calls every time. I follow the rules. And I can tell you that there were a lot of drivers in Juneau that did not do that. They wanted to stay in the dispatch queue, so they took a flag, especially if they're just going from the Baron off to the Capitol building.
Can I
something
you,
like that.
Let me ask
so,
you a question. I've heard this before, real briefly. The fact that some people arrive at the airport or so on and there's no cabs. Are the number of cabs limited in Juneau?
No. So the number of cabs in Juneau are not limited. And I'll tell you why there aren't enough cabs at the airport. Because Alaska Airlines, in order to save money for the baggage crews, schedules 3 landings within about 20 minutes. And they cluster their plane landings so that they can have their baggage crew work one or two sets of plane landings and then take a long lunch break and come back and do another couple of sets of plane landings. And it's entirely to save Alaska Airlines money is why they do that. And no matter how many taxi cabs there are, we have a priority for local. All the taxi cabs in Juneau always had a priority for local service. I can't tell you how many times I was first in line at the airport, first up in the dispatch queue, and I got, and we have this joke that nobody ever calls for a taxi until the planes land. And sure enough, planes would land, and there'd be 15 people that wanted cabs.
Right.
They wanted to go from their home to the liquor store, or from their home to the grocery store, or they wanted to go home from work right when the planes landed. And no matter how many taxis you have, you will never meet the demand.
Representative Klayman has a question.
Actually, about 3 or 4. You own your own taxis?
I did.
Okay.
I don't anymore.
Okay. When you... Follow up.
Yep, follow up.
When you own the taxis... Who paid the insurance for the, well, actually, you had some people that drove for you. It wasn't just you driving?
No, I only drove my own cab. But I can tell you from other drivers who owned multiple taxis.
Who pays the insurance?
They paid the insurance. It's always the taxi. It's always the owner that pays the insurance.
Okay.
In Juneau, there were...
Wait.
Okay.
I don't need the full details.
Right.
Let me ask the questions, and then you can
follow-up.
I try to get my questions short, not longer. What kind of policy limits did you carry, and was that policy limit required by local regulation or just whatever was you thought good business practice?
Well, we have two people that require us to carry insurance in Juneau. One is the city, and they require $500,000 and $50,000
property
coverage, liability and property. Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing is that I carried more than that. I usually carry $1 million. But the other thing is that the Forest Service also requires that, plus they require a higher liability to go to the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area.
So what does the Forest Service require through the chair?
Just the same as the city, except they require a higher liability for people that are outside the vehicle. That is, if we bring them out there and they slip when they get out of the vehicle, they want to be indemnified.
All right. So that's separate from the collision liability if you hit somebody.
Right. Yeah.
So they're requiring, and you don't know what the policy requirements would be in Anchorage, but that would be a function of local regulation.
It would be a function of local regulation.
And the last question I had is, it sounds like you might know this about other cab companies because you only drove your own cab, but did the taxi owner pay unemployment insurance coverage for the drivers?
No. Drivers in Juneau are independent contractors. They may lease a cab from an owner, either a dispatch company or a different cab driver.
All right.
But they're all independent contractors.
Okay. Thank you. Those are the
questions. Thank you, Representative Clement. Thank you for your testimony. I just, there's one comment you made that if ride sharing or TNCs come to town, all the taxis go out of business. And we heard testimony from Rena Davis the other day. And Ms. Davis, you on the line?
Chairman, yes, I'm here.
Okay. I mean, I believe you had testimony the other day as far as what the effect on certain cab companies was when ride sharing was in the same area. Do you recall?
Yes, I do. I testified that there was a market in which we launched, and a competitor of ours launched. In addition, three cab companies launched, and there was the highest year ever for the cab companies. So I do not believe that simply because TNCs are in the market, it can impact the flow of a business to other forms of transportation.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Matthews, are you still there?
I am.
In Seattle, can you make a comment about how taxi companies, are they still in business in Seattle when ride shares come to town?
To the chair, that is correct. There are taxis in Seattle still and taxis on the Uber app as well. The city of Seattle also released more medallions after TNC launched to serve the market.
Okay, thank you. We have one more testifier in the room, and I know the meeting's scheduled to be over, so I think we're going to wrap up, and I know there was some, let me take a brief of these real quick. Hold on. Back on the record, we'll have our last in-room testifier, and I apologize to those that are online, but we've run out of time. We will continue this bill at our next meeting on Tuesday. So I'd like to call Dennis Harris up, please.
James.
I was Dennis. James Harris. I'm sorry. The same last. No relation?
No.
Okay. James Harris. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair. My name is James Harris. I'm with Juneau Taxi and here in Juneau, Alaska. I would like to touch on a few things that have just recently come up. There has been some instances, I'm sure, where Uber and Lyft have said that cab companies have prospered. But I've read of several instances where cab companies have gone bankrupt, like in San Francisco. This is not, they've come up with a few places, but this isn't an all-around thing. A couple others. We do try to accommodate people when they come in on planes. We actually are dispatched. Before I got here, I was dispatching, and when planes come in, especially this time of year, it gets really busy. And we actually tell customers that call on the phone, locals, that it's going to be a bit longer so we can try to service the airport better. As Dennis did mention, they do bring a lot more planes in at the same time, which causes us a lot of problems. I would like to move on to a few other points that I would like to make. There's been a lot of comments on this being statewide and why it needs to be statewide. I haven't seen a reason except for bottom lines that it needs to be statewide. I think that there's been a lot of instances. I used to drive cab in Anchorage also, and we were able to pick people up in Anchorage, take them to Palmer, take them to Wasilla. I've even heard of people going to Valdez during the oil spill, Kenai, Seward, and there's not a problem doing that. There's not a problem whatsoever. It's all about the origin of the trip, not the destination. That's not a reason to be statewide. Phase one of their insurance is extremely low. As Dennis had pointed out, drivers will take trips when they're not on the app. Drivers will take friends when they call. Drivers will, we get thousands of people flagging cabs down there at the same time at the cruise ships, at the airport, and they will get in these cars and they won't be insured when something happens. They won't. They will not have the insurance that they need. Can you imagine a vehicle with six people in it with only $100,000 in insurance? It's not enough. There's several cases of pedestrians killed by TNC drivers without people in the car with the app open, not on a trip. And they don't have the insurance for that. I've heard a lot from Lyft. They have a zero tolerance for drug and alcohol. So do I, as a parent. But they're not testing for it unless they're unless they're told they have to. This is where regulations come into play. There needs to be regulations. There needs to be fingerprinting. We cannot trust billion-dollar corporations to regulate themselves, because eventually the bottom line comes into play.
I have a question. How would you test for drugs or alcohol for a local taxi? Do they test?
They do in some places. They haven't started it here yet, but we are working on it. I've been talking to the police department for over a year to try to get that into play.
Okay.
All right, continue, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, continue.
I've heard from Uber just a few minutes ago. I don't remember his name, but the drivers are able to sit at home, and they make this sound like this is just a relaxing thing, and our drivers can sit at home too. We have apps too. We have computer dispatch. We can do all those same things. This is nothing new that we don't already have. I'm not going to sit and nitpick Uber and Lyft, but I will say that everybody that is against Uber has said the same thing today. Uber and Lyft, sorry, is that there needs to be city regulations. The cities need to decide how they want them treated, decide how they want to integrate them into the system, decide what's good. Drug testing, we just talked about that. What if they want drug testing? Anchorage drivers already do it. Why wouldn't network drivers do it? There's nothing wrong with that. These are all things that need to be looked at by the cities. I don't think that it's unfair. And I think the main reason that Uber and Lyft doesn't want this is because it's going to hurt their bottom line. Austin, Texas was mentioned earlier. They weren't kicked out of Austin. They left Austin because they didn't want stricter background checks. These are all things that Uber leaves cities and then wants to come back under lax and Lyft. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to finger one. Under lax regulations. Most cities, in fact, do regulate Uber and Lyft and transportation network companies. This isn't just one or two here and there. It is very rare. He only mentioned, I believe, eight states that passed. There's 50 states. He only mentioned eight states that have a statewide opening for Uber and Lyft. And there's a thing called buyer's remorse. What happens if they come here and start and we don't like it? What are we going to do? We have to fight billion-dollar corporations to get regulation. And they do it everywhere. They're doing it right now in so many states. They're fighting with the states and the local governments because they want to just do what they want, and they want it now. I run a small operation. I go by the rules. Why can't a billion-dollar corporation go by the rules? I'm lost on that one. I don't know why it's so hard. I think that, you know, a lot of people want Uber. I really do. And I can see that they want Uber. I've seen it on Facebook, and it doesn't offend me. It really doesn't. What offends me is that people tell me that my competition can do whatever they want, but you have to do something different. It's wrong.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I think we have to, we're losing. I think we have members that have to go somewhere. Harry.
I was on hold for 2 hours.
Yeah.
On the phone. You can download an app if you have.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to adjourn the meeting. We will keep public testimony open, and we will come back to this bill.
Thank you.
On Tuesday, and thank you all.